Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this evening. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ. Offering a full range of services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information available, www.mecu.com. In the wake of the glorious celebration of the Ravens' victory, a young man was stabbed to death. Part of that was captured on tape. His name was Deontay Michael Smith. He was only 15 years old. And when I look at that, he's a month younger than my youngest daughter. And no one has stepped up to say they saw when they did see what happened, because there were crowds of people around when it took place. His mother, who describes herself as a teenage mother, but 30 now, has been crying out to people saying, those of you who saw something, please say something. Well, the whole question of snitching has been a huge issue. We talked about it this morning. It was brought up by Bobby Marvin Holmes, one of our producers. We said, let's tackle this on the air tonight, which we're going to do with our guests. And as a way of introduction, to think about this, you know, first of all, let's take it out of the realm of saying, a lot of folks will want to say, oh, no, this is a black thing. No, it's not a black thing. This has happened in every culture in America, especially cultures who have been struggling to get out of poverty, cultures that have been inundated with crime, whether they've been Jewish or Italian or Greek or Native American or black or Puerto Rican or whoever that is. And within that world, there's this code of silence that takes place and a fear, and also has to do with relationship with our law enforcement officials as well. So how do we address this? What does this say to us when people do not stand up and say what they've seen, especially in a case that involves something as horrendous as the murder, something as horrendous as the murder of a young man who is 15 years old, Deontay Michael Smith? We are joined here in studio by Krishana Davis once again. She's a multi-platform journalist who works in the fields of news, politics, and fashion. Rod Rosenstein joins us. It's been a while since he's been on. It's a pleasure to have him back.
Thank you. Good to be here, Mark.
Great to see you. Good to have you again, Rod. I appreciate you doing this. Also, at the last month this afternoon, saying you could do it, which was great. United States Attorney for the United States District Court for the District of Maryland, and has gone through both Republican and Democratic presidents, so he must be doing something right. He will prosecute people involved in the Stop Snitching videos. And Dante Wilson is a founder and CEO of Reclaiming Our Children and Community Project Incorporated, who has worked with people, young people in Southwest Baltimore. He is really has worked and knows gang kids and what is he'll be back. Oh, he's not here yet, but he'll be back in a second. There's been some kind of accident in the program that he's running, but he's going to call right back in. So let me welcome Krishana Davis, Rod Rosenstein. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Rod, take us back for a moment to your work. When you prosecuted folks in that Stop Snitching video. And the whole issue, as you see it, from the perspective of the chief prosecuting officer in the state of Maryland.
I'll tell you, Mark, the interesting thing that we learned through the cases related to Stop Snitching is that these cases were not generated by the video. That is, we didn't set out to prosecute people who appeared in the video. This was not an effort to retaliate against them or punish them in any way for appearing in the video. It's a coincidence, but the reason it's a coincidence is the people in the video were criminals, and I think that's the critical fact that people need to understand. These were not people who were encouraging folks not to snitch out of some moral code. They were encouraging folks not to snitch because they themselves are criminals who know that if people cooperate with law enforcement, then they're going to go to jail. And you see that if you look at the results in all of these cases, many of them unrelated. We've had about 9 people associated with that video who've been sent to federal prison over the past 5 or 6 years, starting with Ronnie Thomas, the producer of the video, who's in prison for 20 years based on a conviction for his membership in a Bloods gang, a racketeering conviction. Van Sneed, who appeared in the original video, also convicted of racketeering, serving 17 and a half years. Akiba Matthews, the cameraman, sent to federal prison for 30 years. Sherman Kemp, also a participant, who's spending 15 years in federal prison. And there are others, George Butler, Warren Polston, Eric Bailey, all of whom were in the original video, all convicted of drug and firearms violations and serving up to 10 years in federal prison. And, of course, the 2 police officers mentioned in the video, Officer William King and Antonio Murray, both were convicted in FBI corruption investigation and spending effectively life in federal prison. So what that tells you is that the folks in that video were criminals, and I think that's what people need to understand, that this is really about criminals trying to intimidate people not to cooperate with law enforcement so that they won't get caught.
And I'm curious, in your time growing up and watching things around the community, Krishan Davis, how you perceive the whole issue of snitching, or stop snitching and not snitching, or fear of saying what people have seen.
I think it's a really interesting dynamic in Baltimore. I mean, you see that if something happens to someone, initially you want to seek some type of justice or penance. But I think that there's the relationship between the community and the police department has kind of dwindled over time. I mean, you look at the PAL centers, which are no longer active in communities. It has really, I think, been very detrimental to the relationship and why people have that fear. They're wondering, you know, will the police department protect them if they do speak, and what is that process? So I think, you know, they have to continue to live in these communities well after the crime has been committed and well after the situation has passed, and it's their day-to-day activities and things that are going to be impacted and affected by them coming forward with information. So I think it's really interesting to look at, I guess, how Baltimore will try to rebuild this relationship, because it's dwindling.
I mean, let's take it from that point of view for a minute, Rod. I mean, I think that this is a complex situation, and I'm going to talk about people's criminality in a minute and what that means as well. But there is a disconnect between many people who in the community who are not criminals. When you look at that video of what happened to that young man who was stabbed to death, there were people who may have known him, known the killer. There are people who may not have known anybody, just standing around watching, who came from all parts of metropolitan Baltimore, county, city, and all over in that crowd. But nobody steps forward. Nobody says, this is the person I think it is. This is who he looks like. This is what happened. Nobody has stepped forward.
Right. You know, we often find when we investigate violent crime, particularly murder cases, that there are people on the street who know who did it, who either saw it or heard it through the grapevine, and they're reluctant to come forward. Now, some people say, well, that's because they don't trust the police. And I'm sure there's something to that, but I think a large component of it is the fear of retaliation. And that's why one of the key components of our program is to make sure we provide adequate protection to people who cooperate with law enforcement. That means by giving them protection, but it also means if we catch the perpetrator, arresting them, keeping them off the streets, holding them without bond so they're not back out there to be able to intimidate witnesses. So it is a complex problem. There are a lot of angles to it. But from a law enforcement perspective, I think one of the critical things we need to do is to make sure that we provide security to people when they do cooperate.
But I think you also have to look at the culture has changed a lot, too. When you look at whenever there's a fight in schools today, instead of kids trying to break up the fight or telling a teacher, they're recording them on their phones. So I think the idea of your brother's keeper has kind of dwindled a lot overall in a lot of communities across the country. You're seeing that people aren't stepping forward in any capacity really as much as they used to help out other people.
So, I mean, wait a minute. I think that, and folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. We're going to get to these calls. We want to hear your thoughts on this. 410-319-8888. And hopefully Dante Wilson will join us very soon, too, who has a perspective. Oh, there, Dante's with us from the community. Dante, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So, Dante, we've been talking about this whole question of what happens when like, you take the video of the young man who was murdered that started this conversation. Deontay Michael Smith, a 15-year-old boy who was stabbed to death at the Ravens celebration, and why people won't step forward. And I talked about you in the beginning when we first met. You were doing a lot of work with BGF, with Bloods, with Crips, with young people in the streets, helping people through the gang process as well. So talk from your perspective about why people are so reluctant to. Reluctance to step up.
Well, it's the culture that society has created. I know when I spoke to the producers, you mentioned about stop snitching, and when I say that it's the culture, stop snitching has became a culture that has been maximized when it really should not have been maximized. A lot of people have the wrong thought process of what snitching really is, and you know when Baltimore experienced the stop snitching epidemic. It was really about drug dealers. It was about people who was living that life. And if I was a drug dealer and someone else was a drug dealer and I get caught up and you get caught up, a person would rat on the other person for less of time or for whatever reason they would do it. And that's what the snitching culture came out of. But when you have media maximize it and different people throw their different perception on it, what has happened now in our community, we have a climate and culture where people don't want to say what's happening, you know, and so we became numb to a lot of the things that are taking place in our community when we shouldn't have, when that should not be the case, you know. And so it's really a culture that we are really battling against, but it's a misperception of what the meaning is. So, you know, a lot of times when I work with young people in the community or work with young people in schools or work with them in the detention center, you know, you have people say where they don't want to snitch and I'm not a snitch. But once I break down the definition in which it originated from, telling, there's nothing wrong with telling. Telling that somebody injured my loved one, telling if something has a negative impact on our community, who wants to live in a community that promotes violence and that promotes death, and, you know? And so basically it's a process where we have to re-educate people on these ebonics, these community subculture slangs and things of that nature. And then once they have an understanding and that they, you know, won't be penalized through this subculture, then they will actually be able to step up and understand or stand for what we would say is right at that particular time.
So how do you get to that place? I mean, part of it is, and Rod Rosenstein with us, just in case you weren't aware, Dante, he was U.S. Attorney for the United States District Court here in Maryland and has served through both the Bush and Obama White Houses here in that position and prosecuted the people in the Stop Snitching videos, as we talked about. Chrishana Davis is a journalist in news, politics, and fashion here in Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number. Ernest, you're the first caller up. We're going to come to your thoughts. But I like to – how do you get to that place? I mean, part of it is there are two ends here, it seems to me. On the one hand, you described what you see as what happens in street culture and what happens, Dante, and that from that end. And, Rod, you represent the law enforcement.
Yes.
And there's a real disconnect a lot of times because, I mean, we've talked about this show before – people don't feel safe when they step up and say something. They don't feel like that the people who they are saying they committed a crime are actually dealt with. And B, people are also afraid of the police as well. I mean, there are a lot of people inside of poor communities who see the police as just another gang.
I mean, you have to look at who's who's policing and who's being policed a little bit too. I mean, if the people who are coming into your neighborhood don't look like you, they don't live there, you're going to be fearful of them. You're going to feel that they're trespassing or invading your space in some instances. And that may not be the case at all. You know, police officers are there to do their job, but this is the perception that the communities are looking at. And they're battling, I think, sometimes when they see outside law enforcement coming into their neighborhoods.
Rod, how do you take it from your end?
I think there are really two different problems, Mark. You know, one is the other criminals out there who are unwilling to cooperate, because they're criminals, and the only way we get their cooperation is by catching them committing crimes and then providing them the encouragement of reducing their sentences if they cooperate, if they flip and cooperate with us. You know, that's traditionally who, when you talk about a snitch, that's who originally people had in mind, somebody who was a fellow criminal, a co-conspirator who was obeying that code of silence. When you're talking about an innocent bystander, like somebody who saw this poor young man stabbed after the Ravens parade, that's a different problem. You know, that's somebody who is probably not coming forward because they're fearful of criminals retaliating against them rather than not having confidence in police. But, you know, I think that there are relationships among them, but from our perspective, you know, they really present different problems. The innocent bystander who's afraid of being retaliated against by the criminals and the fellow criminals who just aren't going to cooperate unless they're facing the threat of a term in jail.
Well, I wonder, you know, I was thinking then we're going to get to the phones right after this one comment. One of the people who I was hoping to be on the show tonight is not here, is a former police major, Neil Ferguson, who's also involved in LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which is talking about legalization of drugs. But one of the things he would say if he was here, and he said in other emails I'm searching for now from previous shows, is that part of the problem, Rod, is, and I'd like to hear all your comments on this, is the criminalization of people who do participate in the drug trade. I know it's illegal, participate in the drug trade, or people who use drugs. We have now Kurt Anderson and five other delegates now who are introducing legislation to legalize marijuana in the state of Maryland as a step in the direction of, in Leap's direction. But what about that? I mean, that seems to be that when you have whole populations who feel themselves on some levels to be criminalized.
You know, the truth is, Mark, in most of our cases, and I can't really speak to what's pending in state court, but in most of our federal court cases, we're not talking about innocent bystander witnesses in drug cases. We're talking about them in violent crime cases. You know, people happen to be on the scene and have firsthand eyewitness testimony about violence that occurred. So I don't think that's a significant issue. In our cases, I think it's more the fear and the retaliation rather than the fear that everybody's being criminalized, because we're simply, typically we're not using innocent bystanders as witnesses in drug cases.
Don, do you want to jump in on this, and then we'll open the phones here?
I think we're talking about a multitude of discussions right now. You know, on one end, we're talking about the drug dealers. On another end, we're talking about police officers and if they are a gang. And I sort of kind of agree with the young lady when you have police officers that comes into communities who are not community police. And so when they're not community police, and they tend to do things that can't not get the buy-in of the community, then that presents problems at some instances. However, because even when I speak to some of the police officers, the community policing framework that they used to operate out of, they no longer do that anymore. And so, you know, what you have is a detachment in the community with police officers, because a lot of police officers are being employed. They're from Pennsylvania. They know nothing about Baltimore and these different areas, and they might come in with that Rambo Savage type attitude and call themselves enforcing the law when it should be more of a community police approach. But when it comes to this situation that just happened, we're not talking about criminals. We're not talking about retaliation with drug lords and things of that nature. We're talking about an incident that took place where a young person was stabbed, and so the culture, the subculture, I don't want to say main culture, but the subculture, which is a misperceived understanding with a lot of people, is that they look at it as we shouldn't snitch. And what we need to do is help counteract that. And how might we do that is through some type of advertisement, some type of marketing, letting people know that it's all right, because it's all right to justify that something was wrongly done so we could get to the resolution of the situation, instead of it being put into a category of this subculture of stop snitching, which really does not exist for the majority of the participants in Baltimore City unless they really know the origin from which it came from.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And Ernest in West Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening to you and your
Ernest, guests. How are you?
Yeah. See, this stop snitching, it's for people that's involved in crime, co-conspirators. That's what that's about. They have it in organized crime, mafia. They had it up there in Boston with Whitey Bulger. The people, as a matter of fact, the FBI that was on the case didn't snitch on Whitey Bulger. They gave him information so that he could escape. So it's not about that. But in reference to community policing, it doesn't matter if the police is black, white, or green. They all police the same in most cases. And they don't tell on each other. That's the problem that happened in police departments all over the USA.
And Ernest, let me just say this for self-identification, because you've called before over the last 20 years a lot. By the way, this is the 20th anniversary of the show. Ernest has been calling in for almost all those 20 years. You're a former policeman.
Yes.
Okay, let me put that on the table. Go ahead. So finish your saying.
Yeah, and I heard on the radio the other day that a police testified went to a supervisor and said that they did something wrong. And sooner or later, the people that testified against the police that was doing something wrong, like excessive force, in most cases, not bribery or anything like that, you're going to get fired. And that's the same thing I believe happened out in L.A. with Christopher Bonner. I believe that the police kicked that boy in the chest, and when he went and reported it, sooner or later, he was attacked, because easily they could have gave each person involved put them on a lie detector machine, and they would have been able to decide it along with the physical evidence. So that stops snitching. Organized crime stops snitching. I mean, that's why they have a contract on Bull Gravano. They allegedly have a contract on Bull Gravano because he snitched.
So I guess what I want to do is kind of focus more on what it is. So if we understand all that, then what is it we do to address that?
No, we have something that addresses it. You have the Metro Crime Stoppers. They give rewards for people that are turned in, and they give them a number. The drug hotline, the gun hotline. This is, and people, they always run out of money, so somebody must be telling. Because the Metro Crime Stoppers, they usually give out a reward for if you give information depending on the crime.
Okay.
They always run out of money, so somebody is telling. But it's people in a gang. If you're involved in a gang, you're supposed to keep your mouth shut.
Ernest, appreciate the call. The questions I really want to wrestle with is what – here we have three people in this room. Somebody who covers the news, somebody who works with young people in the community, the many troubled young people, and people who have been through gangs themselves, and the man who prosecutes it on the federal level here in the state. The question is, has anything ever been done to really overcome the issue of people not, and I don't want to keep using the word snitching, but not saying what they've seen when a horrendous crime has taken place? I mean, what is it that law enforcement can do? What does the community do to change that? What brings a young man's murderer, in this case, and many others, to justice?
I think, Mr. Mark, that, collectively we can work together. It has to be a campaign. It has to be a marketing plan. And the reason I'm putting it in those terminologies is because media promoted this culture of stop snitching. You got children in elementary school who say, "I won't snitch," who don't even know the definition or origin of the word. So are you supposed to be a recipient of harm? If you're being bullied in school, do you not tell the teacher or tell some caring adult to alleviate the situation of bullying because of this false definition of the word snitch? So it has to be something that is done on a massive scale to counteract that. Because when we had to stop snitching, when we had the DVDs and the videos, when you had the court hearings in New York with Little Kim and people wearing the shirt stop snitching, all of this was advertisement. All of this was, it was indirectly a campaign to promote this culture of stop snitching. And so what I'm saying is that in our communities, we in some communities, you still have the neighborhood block watchers and things of that nature who's supposed to report the crime and things of that nature. We need a marketing plan where perhaps if all of us work together, then we can get or generate the revenues to make it a marketing where you have public service announcement, where you can go on the news, where you can have billboards in the community. So now we begin to create an artificial culture stating that we're not tolerating this anymore. And it's not just the law enforcement or the attorneys that's on the phone, but even to a certain extent, the members of the community, if they are aware and knowledgeable that it's all right to tell so we could prevent crime from happening. Nobody wants a child or a parent or a loved one to pass away and die, and we can't find the killer who did this because of some false perception of what we supposed to be, some false code of conduct that we're supposed to live by in the community. Nobody really wants that. So we begin to counteract it with a major campaign to promote awareness, then people will assimilate, because as human beings, we all adapt or assimilate to different things that are presented to us.
So,
and if we are able to do that, then we could promote change.
Don Tabatino, it's a very, very brief break. We'll come back and hear Rod Rosenstein's response to that, as well as Krishana's, then go back to the phones. Kristen Woodlawn's the next caller up. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're talking about what it takes to get a community involved in situations like the murder, the brutal murder, actually, of Deontay Smith, a 15-year-old boy who was stabbed to death right after the Ravens rally. Number here is 410-319-8888. You heard Dante Wilson, founder and CEO of Reclaiming Our Children Community Project Incorporated, who joins us by phone, Krishana Davis, who is a multi-platform journalist and specializing in the fields of news, politics, and fashion, Rod Rosenstein, U.S. Attorney for the United States District Court for the District of Maryland, who prosecuted the folks in the Stop Snitching videos, and as he described earlier in the program, making clear that almost everyone in that video that was prosecuted ended up in prison in long terms for criminal activity. So the question is, Rod, when you take it beyond that, what is it, is there a way to design policy, things like Dante was saying, is a way to address the issue so people do come forward? I mean, it is that people are disengaged, people are also fearful. I mean, what do you think it takes?
I think it's a combination of factors. I agree with Dante that it's really not just about government. It's not about law enforcement, somebody like me coming forward and encouraging people to cooperate. It's about people in the community, you know, stepping up and saying they don't want to tolerate this in their neighborhood. They don't want gun-carrying criminals intimidating their kids on the streets. They don't want shootings and murders in their neighborhoods. And in order to combat that, people need to be willing to cooperate. They need to be willing to testify when they're aware of crimes that occur in the community. So I think that's part of it. Part of it, as I mentioned earlier, is reassuring people that when they do come forward, we're going to protect them, and that it's going to make a difference, that when they cooperate against a violent criminal in the community, that person is going to be sent to prison and isn't going to be around to retaliate against them. So I think it's a whole combination of factors, Mark, that really can make an impact in changing that dynamic.
I'm curious, Krishana, jump in here. I want to hear what our listeners think needs to happen at 410-319-8888.
One of the biggest perspectives to me is definitely changing the relationship between the police officers and communities. So, you know, back in, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago, Pell Centers were everywhere. Kids after school summer programs, and when they got out of school each day, could go to a Pell Center, which were operated by police officers, and they began to have those relationships. So when they saw a police officer ride down the street in their neighborhood, instead of them being fearful or feeling that the police officer was this bully to them, they were more amped to go up to the car, say hi, you know, how you doing, officer friendly or officer whoever, and they had a baseline for a relationship there already. So I think there really has to be a new campaign towards pushing for these relationships at the grassroots level. You have to get the kids in schools, you have to get them on the neighborhoods while they're outside playing, because so many times in their households, they're getting these same messages of stop snitching, or, you know, that there's a battle between the police officers and the community.
I think, and that was something that was started early in the 90s here, and then preceding, I mean, police commissioners coming after said that wasn't the job of the police, but it made a huge difference in the lives of young people to see off-duty police officers sitting, hang out.
It definitely did. I went for many years at different summer camps.
As a child you went?
Yes, mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. What was the experience?
I always enjoyed myself. I think the best summer camps I ever had was actually at the rec centers, where there was Pell Centers. Those were always my best summers. The police officers were really friendly, kind, and there was definitely a relationship built there. So when I saw them, I always spoke. You always had the dynamic there. So it was worth it, I think. I think it definitely made a difference in a lot of communities.
Let's see what our listeners think. 410-319-8888. Chris and Woodlawn, you're on the air.
Taking my call, Mark.
Thanks for calling.
You have two conversations going on about a specific event and then about a general environment.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to speak to the general environment for a minute. And Mr. Rosenstein is repeating this term criminals, and it sounds like an extension of another current conversation going on. And the problem with that is in these neighborhoods, see, you can't just say the community has to get involved, because you're dealing with an environment perpetuated by the justice system. When you have people in communities who themselves may have committed crimes 20 years ago, so they are considered criminals. Now they don't have that mentality, they don't live that lifestyle anymore. But when the police come into these communities to investigate things, and they pull up people's names that might talk to them or might just be in the area, these people are then treated as criminals. So they don't want to be involved because of how they get treated or could be potentially treated. They don't get involved because of the ramifications, you know, what could happen to them by the people who see them speaking to the police. And again, you have to remember the current conversation. They can't legally protect themselves in their own homes. There's a larger dynamic to it than just the expedient, well, the community needs to get more involved. The justice system needs to take responsibility for the fact that former felons don't have a pathway back into society. And when people commit crimes, they're usually going to do that. If anyone's around, they'll do it in front of people who they feel comfortable with, people who they know have a reason to just keep their head down. They don't want to be involved, that type of thing. So we have to have the whole conversation and not just the specific expedient conversation. It's a multifaceted problem.
Now, I think what you raise here is important. And, Chris, we'll go first to Rod Rosenstein. I mean, this is a huge issue with especially Michelle Alexander's works and others about the mass incarceration of people in this country, and that is part of the problem. And also maybe part of the fallout may be, do I want to send someone else to prison? We're not talking about the capital issues, but others.
Well, I think that's true, Mark, but, to get down to the case we're talking about, this 15-year-old boy stabbed in downtown Baltimore, I mean, I can't imagine there'd be anybody who wouldn't want to see the perpetrator held accountable. Not just to do justice for the victim in that case, but to prevent that perpetrator from going off and stabbing or killing somebody else. So I think if you look at it at the micro level at that particular case, you've got a number of folks who probably have information or may know who it is, may be fearful of coming forward for a variety of reasons, but I don't think anybody in that case would have sympathy for the perpetrator.
No, I mean, I don't think somebody on this panel or most people listening to this program right now would have sympathy for the perpetrator who killed that young boy, and who kills anybody really in our communities, or commits rape or any of those other kind of horrendous crimes. But the overarching fear of disengagement, fear and disengagement. In part, would you say that part of it is, not all of it, but part of it is at the doorstep of what many people feel is kind of an overarching incarceration, a mass incarceration of a lot of poor people, especially people of color in this city. That means black folks. Isn't that a piece of what the stigma is in terms of why people don't want to be involved, why they step back? Long silence. We have jumped in, but let's go to the phones and maybe someone can answer that. Let's go to Solar. You're on the air.
Peace. How's everybody?
Very well.
John,
welcome.
And everybody. Well, somebody mentioned one thing in particular that has to do with the community issue. I do agree that I think somebody else pointed out this week that there are more persons incarcerated during this generation than there were actually during slavery in terms of the number one male, quote unquote. Very interesting. However, when it comes to the term snitch, I mean, I think once those persons that grow out of a subculture that mostly focuses on the youth, and they grow into adulthood, then they recognize themselves as a person or individual of responsibility. So again, if you witness a heinous crime in an adult mind, taking in that firsthand stimuli, what do you do? And I think first the term was associated with different types of crime, snitching. If I don't do what you do, but what you do begins to affect the way I live my life, that's not snitching. You understand what I mean? I'm not throwing dirt in the game.
Right.
I'm not messing it up for me or messing it up for you as well. You at that point, the person on the other end, they begin to be problems for the average citizen who works and pays for their part and their piece in society.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I mean, I think we really need to be responsible individuals. That's the bottom line. Because where do we go? Either we're gonna have a civilization or we're gonna have an uncivilization. And one directly follows. So, we have a responsibility that we have to step up to, but so many other things within society need to be addressed.
I think you're raising the complexity of this issue, Dante, and I think that's part of the issue here. This is not a simple thing. You can't. Some of the blame has to go on the doorstep of police activity and incarcerating too many people of color, especially men in this society of color. Part of it has to do with the culture that has been this kind of prison culture of the streets that is taken over by so many men coming back, no rehabilitation, and they end up in the streets and this pervasive culture of what stop snitching is a manly thing to do. I mean, this is a huge issue because people want to take control of neighborhoods, and you can take control of neighborhoods as long as you have people stabbing to death Deontay Smiths.
Absolutely. I agree with the caller just now, and so that's why I say that it has to be some type of major campaign to address this issue. And because you're dealing with cognitive restructuring, what you're doing is changing the mindset of individuals. And even as I listen to this dialogue, you know, a lot of people who are not quote unquote snitching, they're not fearful of anything. It's not a fear factor. It's a culture. It's a mindset. It's a mindset like we don't tell. But what they fail to realize, the pain that it impacts that family, or unless it begin to be your niece, nephew, son, or your loved one who was attacked, you know, then maybe people will begin to look at it a little bit different because they are impacted by it immediately face to face. But that's what needs to happen. The mindset of people have to change. And what's the best way to change the mindset of people? It's through the media. So that means radio has to play certain. When I say radio, I'm talking about the advertisement of what this campaign would look like, the billboards, or what this should look like, the other radio stations, how they go and do they outreach and everything in the community. It really needs to be a buzz and a momentum, and people will be, the young culture will begin to understand because we will adapt to it. Because once again, when it comes to the elders in the community, they have no problem telling. You're supposed to tell. How else is my community going to keep the property value up? How else are we going to live in a healthy community unless we tell and get rid of these situations that happen in this manner? But we're dealing with a subculture that has been maximized based on all the media attention that it received when it actually first came out. Because prior to Stop Snitching, people told.
You want to jump in here for a minute, Krishana?
Sure. One thing I think that's also interesting point that I wanted to raise is also street retaliation on the other side. So when people aren't snitching, when they aren't quote-unquote snitching or talking to police officers, what are they doing in their day-to-day lives or day-to-day comings and goings to retaliate against some of this crime? And is that creating a bigger issue in a lot of these communities as well?
So we're going to take a break here, and I want to thank our guests. This has been really fascinating. Rod, unless you want a closing thought here, which I wouldn't mind from you.
Well, just the point that Krishana just made, that is a significant challenge for us. That is, if the police aren't able to figure out who committed these crimes, there's a danger that people are going to retaliate on their own, and you just encourage a cycle of violence.
Rod Rosenstein is the United States Attorney here, District of Maryland, it's a pleasure to have him with us by phone. Krishana Davis is in the studio, specializes in the fields of news, politics, and fashion as a multi-platform journalist.
Thank you.
And it was a pleasure to have you in the studio. Dante Wilson is with us, founder and CEO of Claiming Our Children and Community Project Incorporated. We're going to take a 30-second break here, so come right back. And we're going to take a trip overseas. We're going to be talking with Abiyami Azikwe, editor of the Pan-African Newswire, to talk about the election in Kenya and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back.